I know most of you have a smartphone, a computer, a tablet, a wrist rocket, you name it, you got it, smart glasses. I'm going to ask, I'm going to pass this around. Do not go online and try to look up what this is. I want to see who can figure it out or knows exactly what it is. So it's got some sharp points, so be careful. It moves, you can move it, and that's fine. So I'm going to start it, and if you guys would just get it passed around, I'd appreciate it. Paula, would you put up the first slide? And maybe turn off these lights here so they can see it a little bit. All right. Does anybody know what that is? What is it? The what? The bunker from Star Wars? You know, it does kind of look like that. Yeah. Yeah, I think I can see CP3O in that window there. Anybody else? No. Good guess. What's that? Absolute, a seed vault? Is that what you said? That's what it is. It is the, forgive my English on this, because this is Norwegian, Svalbard Global Seed Vault. It was opened in 2008. It sits 430 feet above sea level. It's about 600 to 800 miles from the North Pole. It has a storage area of about 11,000 square feet. They call it the Global Seed Vault because other seed vaults from around the world, they'll ship their seeds there. This is for storage in case of a major catastrophe. Some of the scientists say some of the wheat and grains can remain viable for thousands of years stored in there. The vault can hold 2.5 million seed containers. Each seed container holds 500 seeds. So that gives it a total of about 4.5 billion individual seeds is buried in this hillside. So if you want to know how much a billion is, you, Tabitha, you could count one seed every second. One, two, three, four. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you'd get through the first billion seeds in over 32 years. That's how big a billion seeds is. Okay, let's go to the next one. And that dark thing that's hanging down from the ceiling, that's not the picture, that's a rod up there. Does anybody know what that is? It's not a trick question. Exactly right. The Burj Khalifa Tower in Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Anybody know how high it is? Very, yeah. It's 2,722 foot high. I can't tell you how long it would take to fall from the top of that and hit the ground because I don't know math. Okay, let's go to the next one. Aircraft carrier. We all know what that... It's the what? What'd you call it? Do anybody know the name of this aircraft carrier? It's a United States one. It's named after a president. It's our newest aircraft carrier. No, that's been that was retired a couple years ago. Gerald Ford. It's a Gerald R. Ford class aircraft carrier. It costs about $13 billion to build that thing. It has a full load displacement of 100,000 tons. So it's the world's biggest. It's 1,106 feet long. It features a 78-meter wide flight deck, which is 240 feet approximately. It has an electromagnetic aircraft launch system and advanced arresting gear. The carrier has a capacity to carry more than 75 aircraft, and it can accommodate 4,539 personnel. Let's go to the next one. Yes. Picture of an atom. Very small. And this here, an apple. No surprises. If this apple was the size of the earth, the individual atoms that would be the size of this apple. Atoms very little, but when it gets really big, that would be the size of an atom on an earth-sized apple. Next one. Big dude. So, this is the tallest man in the modern era. He's no longer with us. He was born on February 22nd, 1918, and he died on July 15th in 1940. He was the world's tallest man. He reached a height of 8 feet 11 inches. He weighed 490 pounds at the time of his death, and he was still growing at that point. So who knows how tall this man would have got. His name was Robert Pershing Wadlow. So what do all these things have in common with each other?
Measurements.
How they measure up, some big, some small. So, just a little trivia stuff there. I'm not a pastor or preacher. My name's Dan Hackworth. I'm one of the deacons here. I get to stand up here and lead you guys in worship, and it's a fun thing to do. And Pastor Matt, who has gone back east to see his family like he does every Christmas, asked for somebody to step in, so I thought I would. I've never preached before. This is the first time ever. You guys are all my guinea pigs. So I didn't want you to go down and get donuts so you couldn't throw them at me. But my hat is off to Pastor Matt and the other pastors. This is a lot of work. Since I've never done one, I've never had to prepare for something like this. This takes a lot of time. So bear with me. It's not going to be super long, but I hope you enjoy it. So most of you, like myself, we've been in church. John, how many years have you been in a church? It doesn't matter. Any church?
52.
A lot of people more than that. Some people less than that. But most of us here have heard all of these stories and these things before. Just how we put a spin from one week to another on different stories, different ways to deliver this. So, I'm going to bring this to people now. So, from Genesis to Revelation, everyone is different. As humans, we can try to be perfect, but none of us ever will be. So, who is the first person to fail in the Bible? Eve. It says in verse Genesis 6, 3:6, I think it is. When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. So Adam was the second one to fail, and they were in a perfect paradise. So how can we, not living in a perfect paradise like they were, how can we try to measure up to that, to be in a perfect place? We're all going to fail. Cain, he failed. He got mad and he killed his brother Abel. So he was a failure. Let's go to Moses. He is a great man who God chose to lead the Israelites out of captivity in Israel, or in Egypt. He directly talked with God, yet because he hit the stone instead of touching it with his rod, he was not allowed to enter the promised land. How can we measure up when he couldn't measure up and he had face-to-face talking directly with God? We have King David, Israel's greatest king. He pulled some shady stuff and fell out of grace. But he asked for forgiveness, and God gave it to him, saying, "This is a man after my own heart." Do we measure up so God can say, "This is a person," after my own heart. Then not too long ago, we talked about Jonah, a prophet of God. So he was asked by God to go to Nineveh and preach to them that they were going to be destroyed if they did not repent and change their way. So what happened next? He went the opposite way, and what did he become? Fish bait, fish food, absolutely. So he's sitting there in the belly of the whale, you know, and it's got to be stinky and just miserable and unimaginable. But he prayed and thought and talked, and God gave him a second chance through at the whale or the big fish, as Matt calls it. Vomit him up on the beach, and away he went to Nineveh. So he went to Nineveh, and he preached, said that God was, in 30 days, God was going to destroy him. But he was still angry with God for saving the Ninevites. So how do we measure up when God asks us to do something? Do we want to run the other way, or do we want to embrace it and go? Just a thought. Then you have Zacchaeus. Who was he? Wee little man. But when, what was his job? Tax collector. The IRS. Nobody likes them. Oh, if you work for the IRS, we still don't like the IRS. So he didn't measure up very well because he was a little bit on the vertically challenged side. But as Jesus was walking through the city, saw the little guy climbed up in the tree and was looking down at him so he could see him. You know, the Lord said, Zacchaeus, come on down. I'm going to go to your house, and we're going to have some good food up there, good grub. So Zacchaeus made a complete turnaround and gave any ill-gotten gains back to the people he might have taken it from. And if he cheated anybody, he gave them four times back the amount. So how about the 10 men that had leprosy? How many of them measured up? This was another time. One. At this point, one came back and fell to the ground and thanked the Lord for healing him. Only one, in my opinion, measured up to that. Hey, let's go to the Apostle Peter. He was with the Lord for 3 years. I mean, he was, hey, Lord, good to be here with you. I mean, he was that close. 3 years living together, preaching the word, seeing it, the miracles firsthand. But there was a time later on where he denied the Lord three times. Star Wars. So at that point, he didn't measure up. But later on, he repented. The Lord forgave him for that. Oh, let's go to back to Jericho. City, big city, important city there in the Middle East. And we have Rahab the prostitute. You know, what a way to be remembered. I mean, when you say Rahab, when you're talking Bible stuff, and you talk about Rahab, what do you always say? Rahab the prostitute. I mean, that's just quite a name. She didn't measure up to the people of her times, being the lady of the night there. But she realized when the spies came to her house that this was something special. She had heard of what God had done to all the enemies of Israel, how he had destroyed them. So she knew what was going to happen. So she hid the spies from the king of Jericho. And for that, her and her family were saved from the destruction of Jericho. I just kind of have vision, you know, you hold the kids' song, they march around the town one day, and then they marched around it again, blew the trumpets, yelled, and all this. I think it was in silence. Around and around for 7 days. The seventh day, they went around it seven times, shouted and blew horns and all that kind of stuff, and the city all fell to the ground, killed everybody. I can just see this one part of a building standing up where her family was in. because she measured up to what God wanted her to do. You have Aaron, brother of Moses. He didn't measure up at times. Moses would leave and go up on the mountaintop and talk with God and be gone for 30, 40 days. Aaron would give in to the pressure of the people. So Aaron at times didn't measure up. Are we using the right people to guide us, to help us measure up? Throughout the Bible, there are many times a man or woman didn't measure up to what God intended them to be. When we look at these people and see how it all turned out for the glory of God, we can realize God's power, and no matter how we have failed to measure up, God will use us for his glory if we let him. A couple people alive today, one of them is Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son, great evangelist, Samaritan's Purse. This guy is fantastic. But do you know what he was when he was a teenager and a young kid and a young adult? A little hellion. Him and his buddies would go down, take guns, machine guns, shoot down trees, just raised all kinds of Cain. But look at him. At that point, he didn't measure up. But look at him now. He's measured up. Some of you might remember a book from the 60s in a galaxy far, far away. Star Wars again. The book, The Cross and the Switchblade. Anybody ever heard of it? Okay. It was written by David Wilkerson, and it was about his ministry with gang members in New York City. Nicky Cruz was one of the gang members. He was a vicious, evil young man. He killed people, beat up people, robbed people. You name it, he did it to people. But through David Wilkerson's ministry, Nicky gave his heart to the Lord and became an evangelist. He finally measured up. Okay, who's got my little piece of wood there? Has everybody looked at it? Anybody else want to look at it? Y'all seen it? Played with it? Okay. Does anybody know what it is? It does measure. But it measures something specific.
Astronomy?
No.
1.618?
Yes. Exactly what it is. This is a Fibonacci gauge. Fibonacci, he was the greatest European mathematician of the Middle Ages. His full name was Leonardo of Pisa, or Leonardo Pisano, in Italian, since he was born in Pisa, Italy. He lived from 1175 to about 1250. When he was doing his math equations, he started noticing a pattern in them that was reflected in nature. It turns out that the ratio he discovered is the most pleasing to the human eye. It's reflected in almost everything we look at today. Your driver's license, widescreen TVs, credit cards, pictures, woodcraft, seashells. If you look at some of the seashells and come in half, it uses that 1.618 ratio. Interesting guy. Look him up online. Read some about it. I don't know how these people can come up with this kind of information. He did not design the calipers, these here. Somebody else later on invented or come up with these. But this uses that 1.618 ratio that is found in nature, which is what was most pleasing to the human eye. It was God, he sent the whole thing in motion. He designed nature, creation, us, with a perfect ratio. How this works is this. If you take a widescreen TV or a credit card, your picture, I'll get my driver's license out. And no, I am not giving any money to people. Kind of small to see. Got a driver's license. So you take the outside two points, put them on the very outside of it. I use this a lot in my wood shop making things. So you got that. And then when you put the middle 2 points, that's the proper ratio. That's why every credit card's driver's license, they have this shape. This is most pleasing to the human eye. And that's at 1.618 ratio found in nature. So you can do wood turnings. If a vase, let's say you're turning a vase, it's this tall, and you want to know where an accent piece should be on it, it's there. That's what's pleasing to the human eye. We can never fully measure up to what God wanted us to be, but he will use us for his glory and make us what he wants us to be.